This is the Development Locker podcast, and this is your weekly investment in your development as you continue your transition through life and academy football. In season three, we bring you even more episodes, more guests who you can connect with, and even more insight into individuals like you who have a similar experiences in pursuing a career in the professional game. Over the next 11 months and 48 episodes, we aim to cover the key topics you will face along your journey. From the challenges you will have to overcome, the ups, the downs, and many experiences along the way. We will be here every week to discuss the current issues in your lives, support you in your journey, and continue your development to being the best version of you. In your interviews from the locker. We've saved the best till last. And when I say that, I don't mean because he's a colleague, a well-known player, or a recognisable person. I say this because what he's doing will truly be exceptional in the aftercare of academy players. Stephen Corker, to some, may be just another footballer, someone who is overpaid, doesn't care about playing, all the clubs he has represented and will continue to represent through the rest of his professional career. But let me stop you there. He isn't any of those things, and if you have the pleasure of spending just a few seconds in his company, you'll know why. If you haven't had the pleasure, well, you're about to over the next 60 minutes. So be prepared to get rid of your biases, chuck your opinions about professional players in the bin, and throw your preconceived ideas out of the window for this one. As Stephen took time out of his morning after a late night travelling to Stoke, in between meetings, to tell us, and most importantly you, about his Behind the White Line platform and what it has to offer you in this week's interview from the locker. Welcome everyone, the final episode of season three, and we've got a very special guest, but we'll stop there. We'll go straight into the questions, Stephen. In terms of kind of what I want to know, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there in the support and player care kind of platform want to know, is why now in your career do you, and it's a pivotal moment in your career, in professional sport, all the demands that go with it, why now do you want to be hands-on in supporting young academy players?
It's an easy answer. I've learned the hard way. So over the last 14, maybe 15 years now as a professional footballer, I've come across many moments where I wish I had the tools to deal with them from a younger age, because I learned through falling out of the game. I learned through losing contracts. I learned through going to rehab twice. And I learned through losing a hell of a lot of money that that actually, if I would have listened when I was younger, if I had maybe more opportunity to listen as well. I was sort of fast-tracked, if you like. At 17, I was out alone and Yeovil in League One, and sort of education and my sort of me, even my media training, everything was just pushed aside, and obviously it was football. So I think I would have probably benefited from a bit more of an opportunity to learn about myself. But that's not to say that I would have listened, because as a 16, 17 year old, I thought I knew everything. I think as a 24, 25 year old, I still felt that I knew everything. And it was, as I said, it was only through consequences and big consequences of that, that I learned that actually there was a lot for me to learn when I was younger that would have held me in good stead.
I mean, you'll often get this, I'm sure, where, and I know you're not alone in this, but professional footballers in the main will get, why not focusing on your career? Haven't you got enough on your plate? Are you not fully determined in, you know, being the best football player that you can be? Why now, when
people from the outside would possibly look and go, look, you know, you could be about to sign your last contract in a professional football, or you're coming towards, you know, the last few years, 4 or 5 years of your professional career maybe. And people will might find that strange, go, why don't you just wait till your career's over and get involved? Why now? Is it something you're aware of, a gap? Was the story that's kind of inspired you? Or is it just something, you know, you're saying about your challenges through your career? Is it something that you've reflected internally and think, no, the time's now, I need to do something now?
I feel there's two sort of reasons for that. One being, I believe my message is stronger whilst I'm playing. There's very few sort of current players out here sort of making enough noise, in my opinion. Most wait until they're finished. Why? Well, I guess, firstly, to focus on the football. Secondly, through fear of being judged, losing contracts, upsetting the wrong people. I'm not afraid of any of that. And the reason being, which would be my second reason, I guess, is that I've had a lot of money in my life, and I've lost a lot of money. And, you know, I probably today sit somewhere in between. I look at it and go, the money didn't change a thing for me. The playing for England, playing in the Olympics, currently captain Sierra Leone, played 100-odd games in the Premier League. Like, that didn't really change anything for me. They're great things to look back and talk about and, you know, and have these conversations about. But in theory, they didn't really change anything. When I look and go, what really satisfies me, what really sort of, I guess, drives me. And I guess my purpose is to want to make a change, and a change for the better. And I think if I could start with the youngsters and help sort of like them grow and grow quicker than I did, I can't stop them from making the mistakes. I think that's important for them to make their own mistakes and to learn through that. But I think if I can, you know, help them, let's say, provide them with the tools in order to deal with the situations when they arise, because it will happen. You know, you could get a long-term injury, you could get a change in manager, new manager comes in, doesn't like you, doesn't want you. You can have the politics from the board. You can have many, many things. You can have a youngster coming through, they think, well, I want to play him. He's going to be worth X amount to the club. God, I don't know. I mean, I could list 100 things that you're going to deal with throughout your career at different moments. You could have a bad changing room. Lots of different things. And I think if I could help give someone the tools to deal with that, then that's something for me that I can go, yeah, you know what, my 14, 15 years as a player was worth it. Because if I'm able to help one person there, or to able to help the next person, then we're going to see a positive change in the world. And I'm a big believer that there needs to be change. You know, football is my day-to-day job, and I see a lot of areas that need improving, and I see a lot of people that suffer in silence. And I think because I've kind of been on that journey, never really out of it, you know, it's a lifelong journey, especially around the addiction side and the depression. It's for me, it's lifelong. It's not something I switch on and switch off. But what's allowed me to do is feel it in others. So when someone maybe can't see it, I can feel it. And it's amazing how many times I'll pull someone and ask them, like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And they'll say, yeah. So you sure? Because they're like, how do you know them? That stuff. It's quite interesting for me to sort of be able to, yeah, just connect. And again, it's something I enjoy. And I actually place it above my career because, as I said, the money and the moves, I've had it all. And what does it really mean?
Yeah, I mean, going back to you saying there about you want, or you think your message will be louder while you're still playing. And that's, yeah, I've never thought about it like that. That's a kind of a great way to put it. In terms of that, what was your academy journey like, and how did it differ from those young players now going through the academy system? You're talking about, you know, the list of things, and you touched upon some of your, you know, that the fact you were fast tracked, but tell us a little bit about your experiences of academy football and what you see now. Is the massive differences, is the, you know, similar kind of overlaps between your journey and what young academy players are having now?
I'll give you sort of both sides of this. So I feel now that it's a lot softer environment, and I'm going to say part of that's good, but I'm going to say part of that for me isn't so good. Do you know what I mean? I feel like we can almost go too far one way, because and I'll give you the reason why. Is because as a current player, see a lot of youngsters come up, and it isn't all or nothing for them. It isn't, do you know what, today I'm up with the first team, I'm going to give 100%, I'm going to run left, right and centre, and I'm going to press, I'm going to tackle as hard as I can, I'm going to win every head, I'm going to try to make an impression. I don't feel it. I don't see it. It happens on occasions, but over the last 4 or 5 years, there's definitely been a shift in that. I think as a youngster, when I was coming through at Tottenham, wow, that was a harsh environment. And you know what? If you got the chance to go up and train with the first team, you were 100. I mean, I was nervous. I'm sure I wasn't alone. I was nervous to go up and train with the first team. It wasn't just another day at the office. It was like, this is my chance to make an impression. You know, even in the smallest of details, that was my chance, and I felt it, and I knew it, and so did the other boys. And I mean, I had an incredible youth team. Year below Harry Kane, year above Andros Townsend, year above that, you've got Kyle Walker, Danny Rose, Carl Norton, the list goes on, Brian Mason, incredible. I probably missed a few out there, so apologies to anyone I missed, but there was an incredible youth team, an incredible desire within it. And I just think in terms of us going the opposite way, I just feel that almost too soft in some ways. That's one sort of perspective. The other perspective is sort of like, let's talk about off the pitch. I feel it's great that they've got people in player care. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a call with you, but I think it is good. I think it's really important for these boys to have some support there in place, because as I said, it's a life changing moment. It's you know, as I said, it is literally make or break in terms of football. But what people, unfortunately, young players often think is it's a make or break in terms of life. And if they don't make it as a footballer, there's nothing else left. And I feel with player care, you're able to actually support them and let them know that football's not the only way. You know, you've got education, you've got coaching, you've got you can be a tradesman, like be a businessman, entrepreneur. There's so many other things you can be, and you can use your experience as a youngster. I mean, anyone who's been in the academy system, you've got to have a bit about you to stay in the academy. Each year when your place is up for grabs, you've got to have a bit about you. I mean, there's no two ways about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to, because someone is always looking for your spot. And that's all the way up and down the 92 clubs. I think even at a League Two club, which people feel it's not far up the chain, but there's still 10 million kids who want your place. Do you know what I mean? And there's still a lot of people, they're always looking at trials and stuff like that. So I think people can use that skill set to go on to other things in life. And I just think, obviously, having someone in player care is able to help guide them and help them see that a lot sooner than maybe a lot of my friends did from my youth team.
And I mean, you talked about kind of it being a little bit soft, and I totally get what you mean by that. I think back to some of the previous generation of players and their story. They talk about, you know, having to, I think it's Marcus Rashford who said it a couple of years ago about having to catch so many buses, and if he missed one bus, connecting bus, that meant he'd have to walk, you know, 20, 30 minutes home at, you know, past 9, 10 o'clock at night, you know, when it's dark. Do you feel that that harsher environment probably is better to make a player, to get to force them to have that resilience and all the other kind of life skills that go with it? Or do you feel that maybe some people don't make it because there's not that support network in place, or it wasn't in place as much as it probably is now during your academy time? But where do you think that lies? Do you think it's been the making of you as an individual and some of the other people that you've shared your academy journey with? Or do you feel maybe more possibly could have made it if those support networks would have been in place, you know, previously?
Well, you know what? I think that everyone is different. So I think there's definitely cases and arguments that some players could have made it with a little bit more support. And then there's definitely arguments that, you know, someone like myself made it probably because there wasn't that much support. Do you know what I mean? So I would say everyone's different. I mean, I had amazing parents who used to, you know, take me here, there and everywhere as a youngster. But when I actually signed for Tottenham at 15, just literally because of logistics, I was based in West London. Obviously, Tottenham were actually training in Essex at the time, a long, long, long way, for those of you who are not familiar with London and the geographics of it. But it was a long way, and I would have to get the train. So literally finish school, jump on one tube for 50 minutes, get off the underground, go on another tube for another 50 minutes, and then have to walk from the station 20 minutes down a long, dark lane where we used to train. And now and again, someone would obviously see me and offer me a lift down the lane because it was dangerous. It was actually a dangerous road. So so that sort of, I don't know, that sort of journey as a youngster, I feel, helped me. I used to actually enjoy it, I guess. I mean, I didn't enjoy trying to do my homework on the tube with it packed during rush hour and stuff like that. I hated that, that's for sure. But in terms of like, that sort of that journey, I sort of used to have my headphones in and be sort of like using it to my advantage. It just sort of motivated me, really motivated me to go on and go on and make it. So, but that's my journey. You know, other people may have felt, oh, I can't bother with this. I can't bother with this. You know, I'd rather go and spend time with my friends after school or go and eat what they want and do what they want. So, yeah, I definitely think it's different. But I can see that there were some players for sure that would have benefited from having a little bit more support. Because I don't think there's any one way in which to sort of coach or teach a player. Well, I'd say, well, there is one thing that I believe should always be, and that should be the honesty in communication. I think communication is so important, and I think it's an area that, again, needs to be improved on, because when people are told the team late, when people are told big decisions late, it's really difficult to deal with. It's really difficult to have time to sort of process those emotions, and especially as you're young, whilst being young, so I don't think there's too many tools in place to learn to how to process your emotions and deal with your emotions. So if a young player acts, I actually asked you the question, if a young player today is told at 1 o'clock that he's not playing the 3 o'clock game, and he says, "Or well, F this, you know what I mean, this is mad," and you know, doesn't want to come to the meeting or shows some kind, you know, has his head down or whatever.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? You know, because I've seen it in football where they'll go, that's him out. And that'll be him off the list. Bang, he's out. And I'm not just talking about for that game, for those of you listening. I'm talking about out. Like, that's you for the next year. You'll be sat out. Like, as in your role, what do you, I mean, have you come across that? You know, if you do.
Yeah, we've come across that this season. And it's difficult. I think the key word is what you just said there. It's about individuals. So it's coaches are all different. You know, previous coaches will be very full on with their communication and kind of leave no stone unturned about why somebody's been selected, not selected, given a contract, not given a contract. Other coaches kind of delegate that. And you see a range of different coaches, how they deal with it. Some are good communicators, some it's not their strength and they're number two, or somebody else within the support team is, you know, kind of giving either that communication or he's putting the arm around the player when they have been dropped. And it's difficult. And I think that's the beauty of the role and beauty of the job is, you know, there's no just right or wrong. Well, I think there's a lot of time a wrong way to deal with it, but it might not always be the right way. How you would treat one other person, one individual is not how you would treat another one. I think it's having an understanding of their background of, you know, whether they've been playing really well and they've been dropped out the blue or, you know, and then communication with the coaches, the staff, and getting them to really probably understand it. I think sometimes as well, we operate a little bit in a nice little safe zone where I know we wear the same kit and we've got the same badge on our chest, but, you know, we're not football staff per se. Yeah, we're employees of the football club, but we're kind of sometimes a mediator, sometimes a non-judgmental or a non kind of, we're not going to impact on their playing time, their career choices, their contract decisions, their selection, deselection. But, you know, we're there to support really. And I think a lot of players see us that way. And because of that, we have a very good relationship with them. And I think, well, I know that in experience, that's our benefit. That's almost our trump card, really, is, you know, we can kind of go in there and really have a deep, meaningful conversation with them. And like you've just said about your career, we'll always relate it back to going, look, this is just part of your journey. You've got to learn to deal with that, because at the next club you go to, the next academy you go to, it might even be, you might not even get told or even informed. You just see it on a team sheet and that's how they operate, and you've signed for a club and you don't know that till the first game of the first of that season. And you just don't see your name on the sheet and you're just not being told. So you, like you said about processing your emotions, they've then got to learn and use that as an experience of going, okay, so how can we deal with this if we can't control how it's being communicated or when it's being communicated? What can I control? And it's really interesting. You can go into quite a lot of depth and lean on, you know, external, internal support. And it is difficult, but I think to answer your question, it's about the individual, it's about the person, really.
Absolutely agree. And it's also just about like giving them the tools to deal with it, as you mentioned there, because it's not about fixing that particular situation and how they feel. Because if you are there, if Lee Wood's going to be there every time, you know, the manager upsets me or tells me this or tells me that, then, well, you know, there's only one Lee Wood, let's say, at Wigan, right? So when they step up to the first team, that gap's missing, right? So then there's no Lee Wood. So if you have that reaction and the manager sees that, you're out. You know what I mean? You're out. So it's like, obviously, your job, I guess, is to obviously comfort them in some ways, but also help themselves. So, you know what I mean? Give them the tools so they can deal with it themselves, you know? And that's why I think it's important, because they are still growing, they are learning, but they have to know quick. And that's just about it. Football, like, before you know it, your career's over. You know what I mean? Like, so that's it. It's their 14, 15 years as a professional. You know, I can remember, I still remember making my debut for Yeovil at 17. So it happens quick. And these boys are going to have to adjust, because, that's literally just the way football is. I would love to see it different. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see it different, but it's not going to be. You know what I mean? I have to accept that it's not going to be. Like, managers and coaches have their own way. Sporting directors have their own way. And, you know, I wouldn't agree with the way they communicate and the way they do things. But that's it. If you want to be a footballer, you work with them and you learn to deal with it in ways that don't harm you. As a youngster, I didn't learn to deal with it in ways that never harmed me. I self-sabotaged. And as a result of that, I went through a very, very painful experience for many years.
I mean, I'm not just saying it because you're on the episode either, but the session that you did with our lads was perfectly matched to what, you know, kind of you asked me there. It's the kind of title I took away from that, and I know a lot of the lads did as well, is you find a way. It's about that support, but it's ownership, it's accountability. They've got to find a way of, right, I've been dropped and I'm not being told why, or I've been told why I don't agree with it. Then you've got to find a way of navigating around it, utilizing the remainder of your time with that club, that academy, to your advantage. And like you just said, you know, not then using it in a negative way to self-sabotage, and use it as, and you said it right at the beginning of the episode, you know, that learning experience. I think that the constantly doing it in terms of your going back to your academy journey, and I know you said you were fast-tracked and all the rest of it, but I'm interested, if Player Care wasn't around then, it was, but probably not under a title, who or how were you supported through any retain and release, any transitions from fast tracking of academy football, making your debut at 17 at Yeovil? Who gave you the skills to navigate through academy life and into your first steps into professional career? Was that you solely? Was he a standout individual? Did you have a support group around you? How did that work?
No, look, I had some really good coaches in John McDermott, Alex Inglethorpe, Chris Ramsey, three sort of really well-respected names within the game. I was fortunate to have those as my coaches. Did I have anyone to guide me? No, that was, you just find your own way, you know. That was the way it was. You know, I went alone to Yeovil, and the only person that had to guide me at Yeovil was Ryan Mason and John Obika, because they were both on loan with me. But there was three of us. So I was 17, they were a year older than me, they were 18. We got put up in a local B&B, and yeah, we just found a way. We was in a first team environment. We was there with players fighting to pay their mortgage every month, because again, like the glamour of the Premier League is what everyone dreams of, but that's certainly not the case for everyone. I mean, God knows what statistics are, but very, very, very few make it, and then even fewer make it to the Premier League. So playing in League One, you've got people there fighting to pay their bills, and that can be an intense dressing room, especially going back 14, 15 years. It was intense, and a lot of stuff went down, and we had to just deal with it. You know, we literally had to just deal with it. I, again, was fortunate to have the late Cyril Regis as my agent, just such a calming influence on me, just knew how to speak to me and just be able to have a conversation on a regular basis, come watch some games. Alex and John would come watch some games. So in terms of football-wise, I was getting feedback, and Nathan Jones was there. I was recently the Southampton manager. He was there as a player and assistant manager. So again, he was good. He was really good, actually. He was really good at helping us. But everyone helped us football-wise. Do you know what I mean? Everyone helped us in terms of football. Like, they was able to give us feedback on what you could do better and what you could do here. And they came watch games and all of that. But in terms of, like, how you doing, like, how's your apartment going? How is it the fact that you can't cook every night and you have to go out and eat or eat inside the B&B? Like, how is that? How is that living 2 hours away from your family? Like, how is that? You know what I mean? There was none of that. And that's not to, like, criticize or shame any of them. It just wasn't around. It wasn't thought of at the time. It was just, you know, became a man, so to speak, in a very young age. And that was kind of it. And then when I say fast track, it literally went, well, that's it. Now you've done a year, and it was a really, really successful year. So second year, I'm out alone in the Championship, Bristol City, and it's the same process. And I'll touch on this. You know, during that period, I had a child, and you know, again, like that sounded like, wow, like I'm learning to deal with very, very quickly. It's a big transition. You know, anyone who's a parent will know that. You know, at any age, you have to. It's a sort of transition, but yeah, between the ages of 17 and 18, it was a shock, and it wasn't planned, and then it's like, wow, okay, like let's deal with this now. So there was lots of stuff going on, as I just think there is in everyone's life, but I just think obviously with football, very quickly your stuff can then become in the spotlight. So that's probably the difference to your normal 17, 18 year old, because they go through it all as well. I mean, everyone does, for sure. It's just a case of, obviously, by the time I was 19, I'm playing Premier League, and then the spotlight's on, and then the newspapers are coming calling, and then every little mistake you make is highlighted, and that's where I go, I wish I learned stuff when I was younger. I wish I learned these things when I was younger, because I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared at the age of 20, because at the age of 20, right, I went back to Tottenham, and I played 99 league games. And so that was 99 league games in League One, Championship, and the Premier League with Swansea. So at that stage, I was, let's say, I'd made it. By the age of 20, I'd already, what you'd call, made it as a footballer. I'd never been dropped. I was dropped once in the youth team game. But other than that, I would never been dropped. So from 15, I had it all my own way. And then all of a sudden, boom, like Andre Villas-Boas says, yeah, you know what? You're one of my three centre halves. Don't worry, you can go to the Olympics. I said, are you sure? I went in to see him specifically because the owner had said to me, if you go to the Olympics, you're going to be out of selection, basically, for the start of the season. And I said, well, no, it's something I want to do. So I want to go to. So again, my agent advised me not to go to the Olympics. You know, this is stuff that, and that wasn't Cyril, by the way. That was his boss. But these are the kind of stuff that happens behind closed doors that people aren't aware of. And I have a good family around me. So no, that's an experience you want, you know. So went to see Villas-Boas. It was great. Said absolutely no problem. Go enjoy the Olympics. You're still gonna be one of my three centre half. So went there. Had a really good Olympics. Actually, was great. Such a good experience. Played well. You know, full of confidence. Came back, and the first game, I was up in the stands, which made me fifth choice that day. And I was just like, wow, how do I deal with that? And I didn't deal with it well. Let's put it that way. I didn't deal with it well. I just, looking back, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, I had everything. You know, I had a great contract. I had this, that, and the other. Everything was cool. But me, in my head at that moment, like, wow. I can't believe it. That was the first time a manager had lied to me. That was the first time a club had treated me that way. And yeah, I struggled. And, you know, I never had anyone to sort of lean on then. And that's not to sort of like saying to him, I feel sorry for me kind of thing, because I've got to be honest, the guy, I don't know, I would have listened. Because by that point, as I said, I believed probably my own hype, and I believed I should be playing. I believed I should be playing every week. So the question is, at that point, would I have listened? I think at 16, probably, yeah, because I was desperate to make it. But by that point, I kind of already had, if that makes sense. So, yeah, challenging.
And you speak about challenges there in terms of being an academy player and a young professional. And you talked about earlier about the constant kind of scrutiny of being judged, you know, across, you know, everyone's got an opinion of football players, and obviously within a football club as well. It still astounds me how young people, whether you're an academy player or a young professional, you know, you're judged in the analysis, in your coaching, in your training, in the gym, by the nutritionist, you know, all the different disciplines. How do you kind of face those challenges, and how do you mentally cope with, from an outsider looking in? I find it really unbelievable how human beings are expected to perform under that pressure. Essentially, say for example, you're offered a 2-year contract at Club X. Essentially, I see that as, well, you're on loan, you're on trial for 2 years because you're playing them for the next contract. How do you mentally prepare yourself and deal with that challenge where you're constantly going, you know, there's no days off, there's no kind of, oh, relax, or I've just signed a contract for 2-3 years, or I'm fine now, I'm whatever. It's like you just said, am I in the stands? Am I getting picked? Oh, it's coming up to the last year of my contract. Is that going to get renewed? Do I need to find another club? Do I go somewhere? How do you cope with that mentally, constantly being challenged, probably more from the mental side than the physical side, all the time?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I always laugh for people. To give people a perspective on that, I say to them, imagine at 31 years of age with, I don't even know how many league games and experiences at all levels, I still get judged every single day. I've still got to prove myself every single day. But the wording of that actually is because I often reflect on my own sort of thought processes. Well, who have I got to prove myself to? Yes, in theory, yes, I have to prove myself to, you know, Wigan, Sean Maloney. I have to prove myself to the Wigan fans. I have to prove myself to the players there. Yeah, there is facts in that. You know what I mean? There is fact in that. But it's more the internal battle. It's like, why am I still not good enough? Why am I still having to prove it? But that's just my experience in football. You are quite, like, I think that's the best way I've heard it described. Is you're basically on trial for 2 years. You sign a deal somewhere. Even at this age, you're literally on trial. Now, that's not for every player, but I would say it's for about 90% of players. I have seen some players go, you know, especially, you know, been a Fenerbahce where players are on crazy money in Turkey, and it's kind of like, you know, let's get the cigars out, I've made it. Do you know what I mean? There's a few with that mentality, but not many at all. Most players look at Ronaldo. He's still, you know, chasing some form of approval, even at his age. You know what I mean? It's still like, I want to be the best. I'm the best. I'm wanting to prove it sort of week in, week out. It's exhausting. Do you know what I mean? Like, how you can see Ronaldo and Messi be questioned after what they've done for that many years. You know, you saw it last year at United, questioned. It's actually insane. Like, that is insane. How can you break every single record known to man and still be questioned? Attitude, yeah, is it, you know, so I see it on people, but I guess my recovery helps me there. I said earlier, you know, I struggled with addiction, so I've been in recovery for, well, since the age of 19 when I first went to rehab, really. I've been in and out of recovery, so I've had a good 12 years of learning about myself and learning how to communicate and learning how to sort of evaluate my feelings and my day and what's going on for me and stuff. So I learned today to go, do you know what? I can't control it. What can I control? What can't I control? And if I split them two things up, I'm usually okay. So I cannot control if Wigan Athletic are going to go, we want to give you a 2-year deal. I can't control the manager's going to pick me to play. I can't control what the referee's going to do on the pitch. I can't control what, you know, my other 10 teammates plus subs, plus the refs, the linesmen, and VAR. You're going to have VAR in there today, and obviously the Premier League and the leagues around the world. So can't control those things. What can I control? Control giving 100%. I can control, you know, how professional I am off the pitch. I can control Basically, being trying to be the best version of myself. They're the things I can control. And as long as I do those, I try to give myself a little bit of a break. You know, I try to go, well, you know what? I mean, look, against Luton, I made a huge mistake. And, you know, my head for days wants to beat myself up. Why didn't you just kick it away? Why? And it, you know, any footballer you speak to would tell you the same thing. You go to bed and it's going round and round and round. And why did I miss that chance? Why did I make a mistake? Why did I do that? But the reality is, I did it. It's done. There's nothing I could do to change it other than, right, let's go and train. Let's run it off. That's a good one for me. I sort of get up, go and do a sort of session of some sort of sweat it out. I know it starts with like a physical expression, but yeah, also mentally almost just get it out of the system. And then go again and literally go again. And that's my sort of coping mechanism today, I guess, dealing with, football and dealing with the, you know, because I would just actually add one, I know it's a long answer, sorry, but just add one more bit to that is you're not just judged whilst you're on the pitch. As a footballer, probably from the Championship upwards, like, or, and obviously many leagues across the world, you also judge what you do off the pitch. Look at the boys, especially in the Prem.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Youngsters who just, well, Dele Alli, let's say, I know he's not that young anymore, yeah, but he's still young in terms of the light, he's still young. He can't catch a break. He literally can't catch a break. Whatever he does, bang, spotlight. Rashford, whatever he does, bang, spotlight. Like, it's intense. It's really, really, really intense. And everyone going, you're a footballer, that's what you're paid to do. So is that really? I'm not sure that's not what we dream of growing up. Do you know what I mean? It's like we dream of playing football and scoring goals at Old Trafford if you're Rashford, or, you know, that's what you dream of. And then all of a sudden it's, no, you've got to act in a certain way. You've got to stop and smile and take 4,000 photos. And if on one occasion you say, sorry, I'm eating, that person walks away and goes, he's an arsehole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's the way it is.
I mean, you've been very open and honest about, you know, the challenges in your particular journey, your life off the pitch as well as on it. And linking it back to a previous question I asked, that have you got any regrets? Would you do anything differently? Do you think your journey has been the making of you and you've enjoyed it, the ups, the downs, the in-betweens? Or do you feel, oof, if I hadn't been self-sabotaging, if I hadn't got kind of that, you know, into addiction and some of the things that go with that, you probably would be playing at a higher level, or you may have achieved maybe a little bit more in your career, depending what your interpretation of achievement is? Or are you very philosophical about it and you reflect and go, no, I am who I am, and I am who I am today because of that journey, because of those struggles? How do you see it?
On a good day, I see it as, oh, that's, you know, as part of my journey. It's made me who I am today. It's great. I can help other people and use my experiences to be a great manager one day and all of that, right? That's on a good day. Yeah. They're rare. Most of the time, I'm going, what have I done? Like, how am I now in this situation? Over and over and over again. And it's difficult. It's almost like trauma, to be honest with you. It's like, you had everything at one stage and threw it all away. And it's difficult, and it definitely feeds into my passion as to why I want to see a change in football and help other people, because I don't want to see anybody go through what I've been through, because, you know, as I was like, would I have been an addict anyway? Probably, yeah. Probably, I believe so. Do you know what I mean? And I think whatever job or industry I was in, I would have been, but my environment definitely didn't help me, you know, as in the football environment, it certainly didn't help me. And, you know, on many occasions I've come close to death, come close to jail, and come close to walking away from everything and taking a one-way ticket to the Philippines. You know, that's kind of, I've been there time and time again, you know, not on one occasion, time and time again. So I look and go, I so wish that I had the tools and the patience to go, no problem. You know what? I mean, my year at Tottenham stands out to me. You know, I played 27 or 28 games that year. I think I had to play 30 games to get, I think, like a 50% pay increase or whatever it was, and played 27, 28. And Daniel Levy still offered me a new deal with that money anyway. And And imagine my head. I'm not signing that. Like, this manager doesn't even want to play me. Like, he wants to play Gallagher, he wants to play Dawson, he wants to play Vertonghen. No, he doesn't even want to play me. Like, what? Like, I look back now, I think, like, I must be mental, like, absolutely mental. Like, but that was how it was in my head. I was like, I felt disrespected by the coach for you know, a couple of different reasons. And that was it. The chip was on my shoulder, my ego was in my way. And it was like, no, that's it. I don't want to play for him anymore. That's it. I want to go somewhere else. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it my way. And Daniel Levy had said to me, look, like, if you know, I'll let you know now, if you want to leave here, you're leaving to go lower. I assure you of that. And he wasn't wrong. He sold me to Cardiff. Went in there, was captain, thought I'd cracked it. It was amazing first half of the season under Malky Mackay. We had about 10th or 11th. Something went on behind the scenes, he got sacked. And we brought Solskjaer in, and yeah, lovely, lovely guy, really great guy, but just wasn't ready for that job at the time, and finished 20th. And then that was the beginning of the end for me. From that moment on, I don't think I ever really recovered until 26, when I had lost everything. You know what I mean? I think I then spent 5 years sabotaging the fact that, wow, I'd walked away from Tottenham, walked away from England, and that's now where I found myself. So, yeah, that was for me a real sort of career changing moment, and yeah, I definitely regret it for sure. You know, as I said, on a good day, I'd say I don't regret it, but I'd say the majority of the time I regret it. Let's say
that's very honest of you. I appreciate that, and kind of I suppose that kind of really links in now to the main reason why I've got you on the podcast, is to talk about your platform and your academy that you're setting up and Behind the White Line. So when did that kind of become an idea in your head? What sparked that idea? When did you think, yeah, this is what I'm going to do? I know you talked about, you know, your message will be stronger while you're still playing. How did this idea of you setting up this academy kind of come to into your brain, and how has it started to come to fruition?
Well, I just, you know, at that age of, I think 26 it was, I'm sure, when I sort of fell out of football and had nothing, I didn't know who I was. I had no identity. The world was spinning around me pretty fast, and football had most certainly turned its back on me. You know, I'd called, I think, 70 different teams and couldn't get an answer from most. Bear in mind, a lot of these were old teammates as well, and old coaches I'd worked with, and teammates who'd become managers and whatever, but a lot of them wouldn't answer my call, wouldn't text me back. Those who would politely said no. There were some great guys within that, by the way. There were some great guys who I didn't even know who would take a call. I was actually looking at Alex O'Neill last night at the Stoke game and just thinking, oh, you know what? He took my call. We had a really, really good chat. He didn't even know me. He had a really good chat. So there were some good guys within that. But anyway, so that moment there, for me, I never really forgot, and I thought, well, I don't want to talk about it right now. I want to talk about it from a position of strength. So I'm going to work my ass off to get back, and then I'm going to make a change. And I've sort of done that. It's been 5 years since then, and I'm sat here today, and I go, okay, what can I do? So 9 months ago, I thought, let's start with an aftercare academy. It's one of many, many plans I have, but it's a big plan, and it's going to take a lot of time, and it's already time consuming, but it's great. I can already see how it's going to impact so many people. So it's an aftercare academy for those players between the age of 18 and 21 who are released from professional academies who, one, want to find a way back into football. So it's a platform for players to come to us. We have regular fixtures against Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 3, Cat 4 academies. We have regular fixtures arranged against non-league teams. So these boys are constantly going to be in a shop window to showcase their talents. Why? Why, if they wasn't already signed by Wigan, let's say, why are they going to be any use to QPR or any other team? Well, one, because there's late developers. Two, because maybe we'll offer a different style of coaching, which may enable them to blossom. And three, because in my real strong opinion, one club and one or two coaches within that club or managers, whatever, their opinion does not dictate the other 91 teams, like in the EFL all the teams in the non-league, the opportunities that we're going to be opening for the boys in Sweden, the opportunities for the boys to go to America and get full scholarships. Like, one or two coaches do not dictate their future. I don't believe that. Like, it's a matter of opinion. You know, you switch on Sky Sports and you'll see Gary Neville having one opinion and Carragher having another. That's what makes football so great. We all have opinions. So I don't believe any player should allow one single coach or two coaches to make an opinion on whether you're good enough to make it or not. So that's the football side of what I want to offer for these boys. Almost like a second chance, a time to come with us. It's not a 30-minute trial where they have to perform. No, it's spread out over a year, play lots of different fixtures, and we'll sort of develop them as players there. So that's the football side of it. The emotional side of it, a lot of emotional well-being workshops, offers of one-to-one therapy, which is optional for the boys. Some might may benefit from it. Some might think, no, not for me right now. We're going to have relatable players coming in, telling their stuff. So boy, you know, if we're going to talk about finances, we'll get... let's talk about Craig Bellamy right now. Obviously, he's come out publicly and said that. So I'll reach out to Craig. Craig, are you okay to come in and give a talk about that? And hopefully he says yes, especially after me saying this here now. And, Danny Rose to talk about his experiences and that kind of thing. So I'm going to use a lot of my contacts within the game to come in and speak with the boys and basically just be able to go, look, boys, we've been here. You know what I mean? We've been here. We've been rejected. We felt this, we felt that. And, give them that understanding. And then lastly, the education. I say lastly, it's actually one of our strong points. It's something that's compulsory within our academy because I believe that for those players who may not go back into football, that's okay. Like, there's other options for you here. There's other options. Like, there's way more to life than just football. So, you know, our slogan is more than just a game, and that applies to them as individuals. You know, they're more than just a player. Like, there's a lot more to life. So, we've got four courses for them to choose from. And to walk away with some qualifications. So, it puts them in a good position to, you know, go to university already go. You can leave our academy as a qualified tradesman. You can go to America. We've got a scholarship gateway there. So that's something I'm really proud of, actually. That's something that I think is so exciting for a lot of boys to go there and have a new way of life and also still play football whilst over there. So that's, you know, to sort of give a sort of an idea of what it's about. That's what we are about. We're built by players for the players. Alongside it, I'm doing a lot of sort of media work with Behind the White Lines, which is the name to highlight basically the human side of footballers. So if anyone listening, go follow on social media and you're gonna watch this journey grow. Watch this blossom.
I'm sure it will blossom. Aspirations, have you got a vision, have you got kind of a pipe dream, that sounds a bit disrespectful, but in your dreams of dreams, you know, do you stay awake at night thinking about all these ideas? Where do you think it's going to go to? Is it going to be something that you're going to take and have regional centres across Europe? Where do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, I would love to see it go across Europe. We're going to start on a pilot this July for 25 players who have been released, and we're going to start small and build it out. But, you know, I envision this being the first port of call for players who are released to come to. So whether they're released in January, February, if they're told early, or if they're told in May, they know they've got a soft landing place with us. They know they've got a safe place where they can come. They can feel a part of something. They're with people who are in the same situation as them from all different levels. They've got another chance to work under different coaches who have played the game, have been released. You know, one of our head coaches, you know, was in my academy, got released at 18, 19. So again, he's someone who's, you know, playing with Harry Kane. So if you look at the two of them, I mean, he was a couple of years older, but so let's say at 19, he's out of football and doesn't know where to go. And then Harry Kane at the time was 17. So then a few years later, so they've gone from playing with each other to, you know, Harry, then England captain, to the other guy, you know, an Uber driver. You know, that's where he ended up for a while. And there's nothing wrong with being an Uber driver, but he did that in his own words because he felt lost. He didn't know where to go. He had no idea who he was or what he wanted to do. A few years later, he then put football, I'm ready to go back into football, and is now a professional coach at a good level, and is obviously excited by this project as well. So it's willing to come and be a part of it. So that's great. So there's lots of, you know, really cool stories like that within it. And I'm sure like his experience and all the other people's experience within the academy will be able to help the boys. So I want it to be the first ball call for all players who are struggling. And then eventually, as you mentioned there, sort of grow to other countries, especially America. You know, I think that'd be a big one over there. So yeah, lots of plans, but I'm just literally taking it step by step.
That's good. And it's great to hear that, you know, like you said, somebody within the game is actually taking action. And, you know, I'm sure your message will resonate because you are still in the game, because you realise, you understand, you know, you've been through it, you know, you've not got lived past experience, you're living it now. So I'm sure that will be the case. And before I ask my last question, for any lads who are listening to this who want to know more, who want to register for this the upcoming trial and pilot scheme that you're coming up for 25 players, how do they get in contact with you and how do they get a place on in your academy?
Literally just go to behindthewhitelines.com and you'll see their register your interest. Go on there, apply. We've had players applying already, which is crazy because we haven't actually gone public. But go on there, register your interest, and then we'll be in touch and we'll, as I said, support players in every way we can.
Brilliant. Final question, as we always do on the podcast, and it'll be the final question of season 3 before we have a summer break. So it's an important one, no pressure. Last piece of advice, a message, a phrase to our listeners who will be predominantly, you know, academy players or young professionals in this country. Have you got a lasting piece of advice for them?
Yeah, I would say trust yourself. It may sound cliche, but I'll expand on it. Trust in yourself, because like you're going to come across so many different coaches and managers and agents and pundits and newspapers with all these different opinions on how you should play and what you should do. Remember when you was a child, why you first got scouted. Remember that. It wasn't like they saw you and they saw something in you that they liked and they wanted to sign that player. More often than not, once they get that player, they then want to change you into how they see fit. Never lose sight of like why you first started and how you first started. So that natural talent is what people want. And I feel like if you remember that, then you'll go a lot of places. I've been guilty of listening to too many different coaches, and out of the 20 managers I've worked with, they've all got a different opinion on how I should play, how I should play up from the back, how I should mark, man mark, zonal mark. They've all got different opinions. The most important person for me to listen to is myself and my instinct, and go, actually, you know what, I do know how to play, and I do know myself and how I perform best. So I just think that doesn't mean you can't take on any advice from the outside. It just means just remember that when you're having a deep and dark moment where you're being told to do this, that and the other, just remember, actually, you know what, it's about me inside and what I know I'm capable of. Because at the end of the day, coaches and managers and pundits, they'll come and go, but you know, you always have to stay with you. You know, there's no escaping that. So make sure you give yourself 100% and the best possible chance to make it.
Brilliant. I'm sure that message will resonate with our listeners as well as, it being stronger because it's coming from somebody who is still in the game, still got a lot of years ahead of you. And, on the pitch, off the pitch, with the academy, I'm sure you'll make that a success as you have done in your career also. So yeah, I just want to thank you for your time, Stephen. I know you've had to travel back from the game last night. You probably didn't get to bed at a decent hour and had to get up early to record this again. That shows the person that you are and that you want to make a difference. And thank you on behalf of our listeners, who I'm sure will be in touch and giving you a nice problem of having to sift through the tons and probably hundreds of players who want to be on the first pilot, the first cohort of players. And you'll have to sift through them and narrow it down to just 25 or maybe expand it a little bit more. But yeah, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Lee. Really appreciate it.
I couldn't have wished for a better end to the season. I'm truly honoured to have had Stephen on as a guest to end our third season. especially so to discuss exactly this platform was designed for, solely for the development of academy players and young professionals. But what Stephen is offering is far more than just a podcast. It's physical action and a tangible support that will affect careers and change lives. Mark my words. With Aftercare at the heart of his Behind the White Lines platform, this will more than bridge any gaps that exist when players find themselves released from academies up and down the country. I've only known Stephen a relatively short amount of time, but I can tell you this. He's as passionate as I am. Hard to believe, I know. But he is, and you can tell that from every word spoken. Aside from that, his actions really do speak louder than his words. Delivering workshops to academy players whilst trying to process the lack of game time, the frustration ensues, and everything else that goes with it too. He could easily go, nah, my career comes first, my livelihood, my remaining years of playing the sport that I love. But that just isn't Stephen. He wants to do more and is doing more. Much more than some organisations in the sport. I look forward to following Stephen's progress and that of Behind the White Lines, as well as seeing some of the players I support tapping into the Aftercare Academy in the near future. Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and we hope you have taken many key messages away with you. But the next part is down to you now, by putting these into action. If you'd like today's episode, feel free to tell us on our various social media platforms, where you can find us at @thelocker_UK. For guest recommendations, future topics to be discussed, or you simply want to reach out, you can do so by emailing us on thedevelopmentlocker@gmail.co.uk. Remember to share this episode and our platform with your teammates, friends in football, or anyone you feel would benefit from it. So, what are you waiting for? But you're not done yet, as we look forward to seeing you next week when we bring you another interview from the locker.